ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
I think we'll probably have a beer tonight. And then, I think leading into this test match, I actually felt like we overprepared, to be honest.
England coach Brendan McCullum in the wake of the tourists' humbling defeat in Brisbane. Overprepared. Which explains why they're heading to Noosa. Australia has a 2-0 lead and a grip on the Ashes. The recriminations have been immense for McCullum and captain Ben Stokes. From an Australian perspective, it was a test rich with moments. Mitchell Starc at his zenith with bat and ball. Michael Nisa, a career highlight. And Alex Carey keeping masterclass. Steve Smith taking screamers and clashing with Jofra Archer. Ali Mitchell's here to unpack the lot. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Ali Mitchell is in Brisbane, having called 4 days of pink ball cricket for the ABC. Ali, today there are sprawling storylines. I think many have been drawn to Brendan McCullum's interview post-play, where he spoke about being too prepared, given the criticism leading in that was at odds with that concept. It felt jarring, almost borderline trolling. I mean, how big have the English recriminations been off the back of this defeat?
Yeah, a big focus on the England team even coming into the fourth day, because the game was all but up at that point. And then, you know, the resistance from Stokes and Will Jacks to try and restore a little bit of pride into the England fight. But, you know, inevitably the game slid away.
He's a bowling and oh, he's caught behind. Stokes is out.
And then emphatic fashion slid into Australia's hands. Yeah, the comment about England actually being over-prepared absolutely was the one that made you go, oh, because of course all the narrative leading in was England not going to Canberra to play the pink ball game. They had 5 days of training. They do ordinarily have 3 days. And I think there you have to zoom out, don't you, and think, well, why did they do 5 days? It's because they didn't play that warm-up game in Canberra. Why didn't they play the warm-up game in Canberra? Because they deemed that conditions in Brisbane were so different, which is true. They wanted to get there and acclimatise. And so they then did this 5 days, which Brendan McCullum now says was over-prepping. You know, you wind all this back and where is the planning for this tour? You know, look, the attention to detail that England went into for the 2010-11 series took all these factors into account. The years and years to put planning in place for this sort of tour. That comment absolutely has an awful lot of focus. 1 minute, you know, you're not prepared enough, but England now saying they're over-prepared. It's become a mess. You know, I thought Ben Stokes was a very different character, actually, post-match. Cut a much more deflated, slightly more humble figure, willing to say that England have got some things wrong and need to put them right.
We've not been able to stand up to what Australia have thrown at us. That's as a collective group, not individuals.
The fans definitely needed to hear after the very different tone that was taken post-Perth.
Yeah, speaking of Stokes, valiant with the bat, and it felt a little bit of a departure from their style. He and Jacks, the arguable blueprint ethos of baseball, he spoke about Australia not being a place for weak men. It felt pointed.
Teams that come to Australia can't be, you know, like, you know, soft or weak, whatever it may be, because that's how it is out here. It is a tough place to come, but see it as there's no room for that in a dressing room that I'm in charge of.
Do you feel as though this is a sort of almost a tipping of the hat that we may see a shift in style as we head towards the third test?
Yeah, those were quite pointed comments, weren't they? And Stokes has been very, very protective of his dressing room and the environment. Like, no criticism has been able to permeate the Stokes-McCullum sort of arm around the shoulder approach. The dressing room has almost been beyond reproach.
The way that we try and stay tight and cohesive as a group and also when conditions allow, give ourselves the best opportunity to play the style of cricket. When they don't allow, then it's been brave enough and adaptable enough to be able to hang in there and absorb the pressure we need to. But
this was Stokes, yeah, making some very pertinent comments. I wonder whether, you know, the image of Jofra Archer walking into the ground on that third morning carrying his pillow, which was an image that, you know, whipped round, went viral, attracted a lot of criticism, definitely from the Australian side of things, but also, you know, back in England, the England media as well, and suggestions that, you know, could this image of Jofra Archer with the pillow sort of become emblematic of England's troubles, you know, in Australia? It certainly becomes a sort of stick to beat them with, England soft as a feather pillow. And Stokes, by all accounts, I understand, he delivered quite a speech to the dressing room after that third night. And of course, day four, Jofra Archer has time to, you know, rest. He's sitting in the dressing room much of the day, comes out and then bowls his fastest, most aggressive spell in his, albeit sort of relatively short, number of test matches he has played. But we saw that 150 kilometres per hour, saw that sort of in your face with Steve Smith at a time when the game was done.
Well, Batsman, there's nothing going on, champion.
You start to read between the lines almost and think, well, who is that sort of comment directed at? And who will those individuals be that Stokes will now have some very, you know, hard conversations with? Can he rouse these existing players to find that sense of fight, which Stokes and Will Jacks showed with the bats? You know, a different sort of fight. It's not an aggressive, you know, chase after every delivery kind of fight. It's recognising the situation and bedding in when required.
This morning, I said last night, you know, we are where we are. We talk about taking the scoreboard out of the situation, and I said, let's take it out, and all I want us to focus on is just fight. Just show some fight.
Will England make changes for Adelaide? It's difficult to know who they would turn to. The ethos has not been to make changes. It's very much been to work with the, you know, the players that you have got and protect those players, give them extended runs in the side. But yeah, the suggestion that England, you know, as he says, a dressing room that I'm captain of isn't a place for weak men, suggests that he needs to understand and see from the players in that team that they have got the stomach for the fight, that they can stand up to the pressure. That's the other criticism. I thought quite a big statement he made and big admission.
We've all been guilty of it so far in this tour at moments where, you know, we maybe have let the pressure and the occasion and the circumstance get to us and our decision-making ability. But that's just where it's so important to, you know, have that real clear mindset about everything that you're going into.
He needs to know that the 10 other players he's walking out with for an Ashes test match can stand up to that pressure. So that's going to be up to him to find that out and determine over the course of the coming days.
You hit the curious subplot of Archer v Steve Smith, and Archer suggesting, you know, the skipper only plays shots when it's low stakes, and Smith levelling a similar criticism the other way around Jofra's bowling. I do wonder whether that episode might spark Archer further. Can he harness that short spell and deliver something more deep and broad in Adelaide? What do you think?
Well, he needs to. If he's going to play in Adelaide, he needs to be able to hit those speeds. That's what he's in the team for. His strength is the speed. England know that Mark Wood has got, you know, the knee issue has flared up again. Who knows whether he's going to play a part in the rest of the series at all. So if Archer's playing, he needs to be bowling at 150, because if he's down at 130, 135, well, that attack is very, very samey. And that's what it looked like during the Gabba test match with Cass, Atkinson and Archer. There wasn't that point of difference with that extreme pace until, you know, the horse had not only bolted, it galloped over several states, you know, by now and fully disappeared. So it was a mixture of, you know, I think real frustration from England fans sort of looking at it saying, this is great, Jofra, but where was this in the first innings? Stokes explained it a little bit by suggesting that when Archer feels he needs more control, he brings his pace down so that he can find that control. But they need him to have control and pace. So can he rev himself up? Can Stokes get him revved up? Either way, England need him to be on that mark from the first ball of a new spell with the new ball every test match he plays.
Mitchell Starc was at the heart of a famous win from an Australian perspective. Do you sense a player revelling in the need to be the spearhead of an attack?
I think this is another issue as well. You look at that bowling attack and who is the real leader. James Anderson was retired sort of with a view to then having a fresher, younger, like pace attack for the future for this Ashes series. Chris Wokes was effectively retired. I mean, I think there was any way he would have announced his own retirement from cricket unless he'd been sort of given a bit of a tap to say, you know, we're not likely to select you for the Ashes. We're not going to have you. And so he announced his retirement. But it felt as if England really were crying out for someone who's got deep experience, deep knowledge, to be having sort of constant conversations, you know, when you're at the end of your mark, to mid-on, mid-off, to your captain. It doesn't really feel as if either Archer or Atkinson are that sort of leader of the attack who can step up, who will be demanding changes, who will be saying, this is what we should do, here's a plan. And so the attack overall lacked bite, lacked venom, lacked cohesive plans. And so, yeah, that certainly is a factor that England, you know, can't fix immediately, because there's nobody else in the squad that can really take on that role. But yeah, you couldn't help but think England really missed experience amongst their opening bowlers. And now, you know, they face going to Adelaide, where Australia have Nathan Lyon and Pat Cummins coming back into their attack.
And you could make the argument that some Australian storylines have been somewhat buried. It was wild to hear Nathan Lyon's comments in the middle of the test following him being dropped from the side.
Absolutely filthy, but I can't do anything about it. So, just hope I can play my role in making sure I can get the guys ready.
But selectors probably feel a sense of vindication given Michael Nees's excellent 5-wicket haul in the second innings. Then there's Usman Khawaja. When you consider how well the top of the order performed in his absence, has he played his final game of Test match cricket?
Do you know what? It feels as if Australia have got an opening pair for the foreseeable future. But Usman, you know, is doing everything he can to say to the selectors, I'm getting myself ready, you know, I'm still available for selection. He's desperate, clearly, to play a further part. This is a winning team and it's very difficult to change a winning team. Australia are on a 2-0 roll. I don't think there's anything to suggest that, you know, Travis Head opening is a bad call at the moment.
Cast tries again and Head is back. That's going off the edge and down to third man for six. It's gone all the way.
He really wants to do that role as well. Weatherall has just come in the team. You know, he hasn't done anything to warrant being, you know, left out or dropped either. So it feels as if Australia now have a sort of solution to the openers for, you know, coming few years. They always needed to find a replacement for Khawaja, but obviously was thinking it was Weatherall. Ultimately, they were going to have to find somebody to partner him whenever Khawaja retired anyway, but they've currently got somebody.
The stat doing the rounds is that it's been nearly 90 years since any team, Australian or English, has come from 2-0 down to win a series. Don Bradman, a reasonable batter in the midst of that comeback.
He did all right, didn't he?
Yeah. If Stokes and co want history, do you believe that they are within their rights to remain hopeful?
Oh, you have to remain hopeful, don't you? Because without that, what are you playing for? There are still 3 matches to go.
The worst thing to do now is to not have hopes and not realise that we've still got that opportunity to do what we came out here to do. We are 2-0 down, there is 3 games left. If we lose hope over the next couple of weeks, well, even from next week, then, you know, we might as well not really turn up.
You're always playing for something. I mean, even in the face of a series defeat, England haven't won a single test match here since 2010-11. So any single test match win would feel like a mini win within the series, even if the bigger prize gets lost in Adelaide. Here's another stat for you. England have already gone 2-0 down in less than 6 days of cricket. The fastest Ashes defeat was an 11-day series defeat for England. They went 3-0 down inside 11 days in 2001. That is an unwanted record that could well be broken at Adelaide. There's a lot of pride at stake for England. Yes, they could come back and win a match later in this series. Very, very difficult to come back from 2-0 down to actually win it. That almost feels impossible. It's very hard to see how they're going to win 3 matches at all.
Ali Mitchell, thanks for your analysis. We appreciate it.
Good to speak to you.
Headlines. The Socceroos have landed a pretty thrilling FIFA World Cup draw for arguably the biggest tournament in world sport. The Australians are in the same group as the hosts, the USA, Paraguay, and one of either Turkey, Romania, Slovakia, or Kosovo. We will be going a little deeper on the permutations of that draw a little later in the week, but wow. Imagine the Socceroos taking on the Yanks in front of a massive home crowd in Seattle on June 20. That's going to be scenes. The Aussies will start their tournament against the yet-to-be-decided nation in Vancouver 6 days earlier on June 14. Their last group game is against Paraguay. Santa Clara, June 26. Oscar Piastri had a massive crack, but ultimately fell just short in the Formula One. Lando Norris is the F1 world champ after finishing third at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, the last race of the season. Piastri, he delivered an inspired pass early to get in front of Norris and move into second. He coupled that with a pretty aggressive pit strategy, but ultimately Max Verstappen won the race. The final standings, Norris first, Verstappen second, 2 points back, Piastri 13 points off top in third. A lot to like about this season, but heck, at about the halfway point, he would have been thinking he was right in the mix for a world title. Speaking of near misses, did you catch Cam Smith's painful final hole at the Australian Open at Royal Melbourne? The Queenslander had a 5-foot putt to send the tournament to a playoff. This is the sound of what happened.
It's not to be for Cam Smith and Rasmus Nygaard-Petersen. He's the Australian Open champion.
Dane Rasmus Nygaard-Petersen, a one-shot victory. pain for the Queenslander. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to Channel 7 and Fox Sports for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.